Grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer. Well, hello everybody, and welcome to the Dudes and Beer podcast episode, what are we on now? 279. How about that, folks? I can't even tell you how many hours of Dudes and Beer in your ears that quite literally is. I think it goes into the numerous days now. Tonight, our guest is the amazing Dr. John Hall. We will be talking about COVID updates. We will be talking about vaccines, right things in the news, wrong things in the news. Of course, whether or not you should be wearing a mask. Sad that we even have to have that discussion in the world. But before we do, I want to make sure everybody knows to stop on by podcastcadet.com, everybody. That is who we are brought to you by. I'm a member of podcastcadet.com. We provide one-on-one podcast services. Stop on by, check it out. You're trying to start up a podcast for your friends, family, church, business, whatever. We are the place for you. We provide one-on-one podcast instructional and auditing services. Everything from branding a show, starting a show, the technology, to where to host, how to host, distribution, monetization, every bit of it. Stop on by podcastcadet.com today. Use the code DUDES20 to save 20% off your entire cart. Our show today, like I said, Dr. John Hall. We will also have an update from my good cousin Zachary Londine out of Houston, Texas, who has been spending the last week or so actively working the COVID ward at Houston's Methodist Hospital. He is normally a rotating OR nurse, and due to the need, he has been placed in there. So we're going to get literally a ground floor, boots on the front report of what is going on, what the policies, procedures are, what you can do, things like that. But first, I thought it was extraordinarily important for us to play some words today that came out from the head of DHS. There have been numerous reports. We've covered them here on Dudes and Beer. Last week, we talked about some of the stuff going on in Portland. Since then, there have been reports of, quote, unmarked police officers coming and taking people off the street, things like that. And, you know, that's one of the things that we talk about on Dudes and Beer a lot is the media, how the media covers things, how the media actively conflagrates things whenever they come about and start literally chasing a headline instead of chasing the facts. And that is quite literally what our head of DHS came out and said today. I think the words are very important right now. We are on a huge dividing line in our country. And, you know... I kind of have to be the voice of reason and say, let's listen to what the government has to say about it. Like, I know that we aren't all big fans of the government right now, especially the man in charge, things like that. You can have your personal feelings about it all you like, but there is a legal job that has to be done. There is something that must be done. And I think that the words of the head of DHS, like, no reporter could do them justice. We're going to go ahead and listen to the about 4 minutes here of the head of DHS talking about this stuff. So let's check it out. Head of DHS talking about the mobilization of DHS personnel against the folks in Portland, Oregon.
I've erected barriers to block entrances to courthouses, attempted to breach the courthouse, have thrown explosive materials in the courthouse, and again, the city of Portland takes little to no action. The reasons increased DHS personnel are important, or in Portland, is twofold. One, violent criminal activity every single night for 52 nights. And two, the lack of action from city officials and law enforcement. Department law enforcement officers are there to protect a symbol of justice, the courthouse. We mostly do that in a very defensive posture. However, we have been forced, because of lack of local law enforcement presence, to take measures such as arrest to protect our officials. The law is clear on what our authority entails. Specifically, federal statute states that the Secretary of Homeland Security, and I'm quoting, shall protect buildings, grounds, and property that are owned, occupied, and secured by the federal government. The law goes on to state that the department can conduct investigations, again, I'm quoting, on and off property in question, on offenses that may have been committed against property owned and occupied by the federal government or persons on that property. In other words, we are expressly allowed to leave federal property to conduct investigations and arrest individuals who have damaged federal property. We do this, of course, in conjunction with the Department of Justice. Many of our law enforcement officers in Portland have other responsibilities around the country. They are away from their families and putting their lives at risk every night. The smear attacks leveled against our officers is disgusting. As it relates to CBP officers deployed in Portland, these highly trained officers are in multi-camouflage wear because they work on the southwest border, and they work in an environment that demands that. That is their everyday uniform, and it is completely appropriate. They have insignia on their uniforms that read police, and they have patches, and the acting commissioner will talk about that in a little bit, that indicate which agency they are from. Let me repeat, these officers are not military. Let's not confuse that. I've seen inaccurate press reporting accusing them of being military. They are not military. They are civilian police officers. These police officers are not stormtroopers. They are not the Gestapo, as some have described them. That description is offensive, it's hyperbolic, and it's dishonest. And every law enforcement officer and every reasonable American knows this. While I look forward to the day that our officers are redeployed back to their regular day-to-day mission, we will not shrink from our duty because of this violence. I've heard the mayor of Portland recently state that the federal government is to blame for this violence. Rational people know that is not true. He would have you believe that enforcing federal law incites violence. He would have you believe that holding criminals accountable incites violence. In the last 52 days, Portland has declared a riot on numerous occasions because of this nightly violence. And while this action helps, unfortunately, they only take this action when city officials or local law enforcement are targeted, not federal. On July 3rd, before any surge of DHS law enforcement resources arrived in Portland, the mayor said the violence, and I quote, has been going on for more than a month now. Groups continue to target the Justice Center. They continue to hurt small businesses. And these attacks undermine public safety. These words are true today as they were before DHS law enforcement arrived in the city of Portland. My message is very simple. If you're looking to peacefully protest in Portland, the department respects your right to do so. Please do so away from the violent activity that is taking place near the courthouse on a nightly basis for your own safety. If you are a violent rioter looking to inflict damage to federal property or law enforcement officers, you need to find another line of work. We will not retreat. We will not continue, or we will continue to take the appropriate action to protect our facilities and our law enforcement officers. If you're a local leader, now is the time to step up and protect your community. Work with the department and other federal authorities in Portland to responsibly bring this nightly violence to a close. And if you're in the media, report the facts, all the facts. Do not glamorize the anarchist and the criminals. And do not perpetuate the false narratives many of us have seen recently. I pulled two headlines before coming down here today. One, U.S. official calls protest anarchist. Inaccurate and very misleading. Individuals trying to set fire to a building are no longer protesting. They are criminals. I or any other senior official at the department has no problem with peaceful protesters. Said that a couple of times. I'll say that again. Second headline, unidentified federal agents are detaining protesters in Portland. again, inaccurate and false. As you've heard I say, you'll hear Acting Commissioner Morgan say, all officers are identified as police law enforcement officers. We are only targeting and arresting those who have been identified as committing criminal acts, like any other law enforcement agency does across the country every single day of the week. We all have a responsibility to condone the violent activity that is occurring night after night.
And, of course, he meant not condone the violent activity that's going on night after night. I thought that was highly important to chat about this evening, to just kind of bring up. I know it is not necessarily the topic of our show tonight, but I think it really does bear with the stress that's going on in our country. I think it's interesting that all of this is happening while we are still in a declared state of national emergency. There were numerous people, and once again, I am no fan of the current administration, but there are numerous people out there that decried, why have you not declared national emergency? It is because the powers of the president go long and far and deep during the times of national emergency, people. Go through and read the Emergency Powers Act. You will see that they can suspend banking. They can suspend communications in and out of the country. They can suspend the U.S. mail service. All those mail-in ballots that we're all so worried about right now, imagine them not being able to come in. How do you think ballots get counted to begin with and get to the places, to the polling agencies, so that we can find out precisely what the results are in real time? The internet, communications. So the Emergency Powers Act allows for a large latitude of things, and we are still under that right now. Despite that, Portland, Oregon is also within a 100-mile zone of any port, land, or sea within the United States. And once that happens, we are quite literally in the point of Fourth Amendment is suspended. How many times have we talked about on this show right here? So, literally, there are so many things that are there, and quite literally, like the DHS head said, none of that is even why this is happening. This is quite literally happening because people are attacking federal property, and it is my job to protect federal property. So, horrible things are happening all over our country, and we literally do have to watch ourselves. We have to watch out, like he was saying, if you know where the violence is happening, don't go where the violence is. Just don't. Don't do it, because there's no protesting going on where that violence is. It's just violence. And it's been violence for more than 30 days. If you want to go protest peacefully, go to the places that the protests are happening. Welcome to the show today, Dr. John Hall. How are you this evening? So sorry about the long intro today. Long intro.
No, that was very interesting. A little bit of that on the news earlier today. So.
Yeah, and it's absolutely wild to even look at what is going on right now, and know that all of this, like I said, isn't even because of anything that's happened. It kind of spurred from all this, but you'd think that DHS would be there taking care of protesters because, the president has some kind of extraordinary means of power right now. Not even the case. So.
No, this is just good old-fashioned. They're there to protect federal property, and it would be the same in any city. So, luckily we're not seeing it, to that extreme in Texas.
Yeah, but, precisely. Most of the protesting going on in Texas. Now, granted, there was some looting that happened here in Austin, things like that, but that was not part of the protests. Once again, that is not protesters, people. You must learn to differentiate between the two. Extremists. I've responded to somebody in a group today. Unfortunately, extremism will always be met with extreme measures. which just begets more extremism. It's just the way that works. And we've very much kind of seen that echoed in the way that the world and society has reacted and recoiled at the same time to the COVID epidemic. It's been really interesting to see the way that just dealing with the medical epidemic has polarized our society. How do you, as a medical professional and as a doctor, how does that make you feel to know that, like, this is being fully politicized?
Well, and that's part of what we're fighting. It's one thing to be a physician or be a nurse or a medical professional and be dealing with what we're dealing with already. But then you're having to deal with all the headlines and all the Facebook experts and Twitter experts who,
yeah,
you know, some probably are on the far side of, you know, of it is being a bigger medical problem than it maybe is. And then others are saying that it's a hoax and it's a violation of their civil rights to have to wear a mask or have to distance or have to close down. And, you know, as medical professionals, we're kind of stuck in the middle. You know, we've got to deal with the sick people as they come in, and, you know, people that are coming in, you know, and I see it, you know, in my office, we check your temperature. You know, you can't come in if you've got a temperature. They say, you know, 100.6, you know, if you're over 99, you know, we treat you outside, you know, we make you wear a mask in the office, and, you know, we've limited the number of people that can be in the lobby and in the office at one time. But it's rough because, you know, you get those people that come in that are like, I'm not going to wear a mask if I, you know, and I said, well, you're not going to come in the office.
Yeah. And then you're not going to get treatment, you know, today, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
We, as well, are a business.
I have myself and my staff I have to protect. So,
well, I mean, people forget you're also a business. You have the right to refuse service to anybody. And that's just it. You know, I've had the debate numerous times here in my house. I've had the debate numerous times at my mother's house, and it's one of those, hey, man, the beautiful thing about America is that you have the God-given right to wake up and make any stupid decision you want to today. That's a beautiful thing. Now, granted, that decision comes with repercussions. That decision comes with accountability, responsibility. So make that stupid decision with your caveat there, that there may be repercussions to your stupid decision and actions. But I can definitely, like, see the argument that people are making, and I can definitely, you know, play the devil's advocate and be like, hey, you know, you trot on one part of the rattle. Does the whole thing sound the same now? You know? And yeah, it's disturbing, but it's also one of those, me as a person of common sense, I'm just going to wear a mask and wash my hands. How hard
is
that?
Well, and it's kind of like you were talking about with the rioters and looters. You know, we're rioting because, you know, we have a systemically racist, you know, government, and our State Department is fascist. And, You know, if the government was truly fascist, you wouldn't have got away with much looting and many firebombings. Try that in China. You'll see what a fascist government does in response to looting and rioting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's over fairly quickly.
You also wouldn't really have the chance to call them out in public like that. Probably have Facebook to the extent that you do.
But honestly, with the whole COVID thing, you know, we've got the politicians saying one thing. We've got Dr. Fauci saying one thing. We've got, you know, a plethora of other experts that are kind of coming out and saying one thing or another. And then you've got those of us on the ground floor actually treating people that are seeing something possibly completely different. You know, one thing I will, just for your listeners, and I know I'm on Facebook a lot, and people know me by my books. But, you know, this virus isn't a hoax. You know, I've seen a lot of people saying, well, it's a hoax. It's just the way the government's trying to control us. You know, unfortunately, this virus was manipulated from a bat in the Wuhan lab. You know, and my personal belief, and this is strictly my personal belief and differs from the CDC, yes, this had to be manipulated into a human host. you know, this didn't come from somebody eating bat soup, and then all of a sudden the whole globe got a coronavirus that was from a particular species of bat. It was manipulated and it was released. Now, it'll probably be 20 years before that truth actually completely comes out, and it'll be one of these things that just turns up in a history book, you know, that, well, we were experimenting with this virus, and either it was intentionally released or it was accidentally released. We may never know the truth, and that's probably closer to the fact.
Yep.
But nonetheless, we've got a bat virus that's now within the human species, and the problem with this virus is it reacts differently with every single person that it attacks. You know, at least with, you know, with bird flu and swine flu, you know, when you got infected with it, you know, you got a fever, you got a runny nose, you got pneumonia. Some people died from pneumonia that got bad enough to go into ARDS, you know, acute respiratory distress syndrome. But this virus is a whole different breed, you know, and unfortunately we have the government kind of lying to us at first, saying don't wear a mask. There's no reason a mask isn't going to protect you and blah, 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 blah. And the reason they did that was so there wouldn't be a run on masks, and hospitals and first responders would still have an opportunity to have PPE. Well, you can blame that on our own government and basically on us, you know, letting our government send jobs overseas, because all of the PPE was being made overseas. None of it was being made here. None of our medicines were being made here either.
Yes.
So,
part of the infrastructure supply chain issue was that we outsourced all of the supply chain.
And if we had, if we would continue to have administrations that wouldn't tax the crap out of corporations to the point where they have no choice but to make their stuff overseas and then just sell it here, then we would be in a lot better condition. And I hopefully that's opened a lot of people's eyes. That we need to manufacture our own stuff. We need to make our own medicines. You know, we can't keep farming this out, you know, to third world countries where you can pay $3 or $4 an hour. It needs to be made here.
Well,
and the only way that's going to happen is to give corporations a tax break to do it.
We also can't, I mean, what are we going to do? Cover the revolution with our slavery made cell phones?
Yeah.
Is that what we're going to do? Literally just not even call it out, you know, because you can't say end it here, end it now, and keep letting it happen overseas and keep giving money to that machine and keep letting that happen, most definitely. So it really is, like I said, it's become a strange issue all around. And to know that this is how far a pandemic has brought our country. We have had some wild conversations on this show with our audience, John Hall. And you know as well as I do, I am in the same camp as you. We'll definitely be getting into some GOF, as it's called, or gain of function research. That up until 2015, folks, we were funding. We outsourced our gain-of-function research into coronavirus to guess who? Wuhan. To Wuhan, China. So we were literally, yes, paying money to research. And we'll be showing you the articles. We'll be, if you hop on over to dudesandbeer.com and check out the website, of course, our episode post for tonight has all of this good stuff in it. All of the highlighted areas that you see are all articles that we will be referring to in the show. And once we start talking more about gain of function and how we were funding that and why we were funding that and why we moved the funding over. You know, so it's like we already know that that was happening. We know that we have labs in the U.S. that play with this stuff. If anybody remembers the anthrax attacks on the U.S., the stuff came from U.S. labs. So we quite obviously have labs that sit around and play with these things. And despite all of this, it's still, like you're saying, a conspiracy theory for a lot of people that it even exists. And beyond that, the fact that people really don't still take it seriously. Now, hey, don't get me wrong. If I'm walking down the street, I'm not wearing a mask. I've got one around my neck, like at the ready to go, I get 10 feet within somebody, I'm putting a mask on, you know. I get out of my vehicle, I'm putting the mask on.
If you're outside where there's a nice breeze blowing and you're in fresh air and there's nobody around you, you don't need a mask.
Yeah.
If you're driving by yourself in your car, you don't need a mask. If you're in an enclosed space, and even if you're more than 6 or 10 feet apart from people, if you're in an enclosed space where you're recycling air, wear your mask. You know, and the mask, not only it will protect you from breathing in some droplets, but more than anything else, if you're positive for COVID and you're not showing any symptoms, it protects other people from you. And that is the main function of the mask. And I can see where if you live in a small town, I've seen a lot of people online and a lot of people have actually, you know, PM'd me on Facebook saying, well, I don't know anybody that's tested positive for it, and I don't know anybody that's died for it. I don't think it's really happening. Well, let me tell you, my best friend's wife died last night from it.
Yeah.
She was 40 years old, owned a gym, and was healthy. So her husband got it. He wound up giving it to her. He got over it. She wound up throwing clots to her heart, frothing at the mouth, and died suffocating in his arms before the EMS could get her to a hospital. And this is after I spoke to her Sunday, and she was actually turning the corner and seemed to be doing well. And that's the problem with this virus, is it affects everybody differently. It's, you know, you may not be the person that gets the runny nose and the 103-degree fever, you know, and a little bit of congestion in your lungs. You may be the person that just freaking clots up your pulmonary artery or your coronary arteries and dies of a heart attack from it. Because that's the main way that a lot of these young people are presenting, is with clotting disorders. And there's some ways that we can talk about that might protect you from that. I mean, certainly this is my own thinking and probably not going with along with the CDC on some stuff. But, you know, for those that think it's a hoax, I talked to this woman and she's a good friend, got a direct line to me. And of course they called me the minute they were positive. They were told in the ER, you know, if you're not having trouble breathing and you're not running a high fever, you know, here's a Zithromax pack, you know, here's a steroid pack, try to treat it at home. If you start having trouble breathing, then come to the ER and call us ahead. Well, she didn't have trouble breathing until that breathing trouble was actually killing her.
Wow.
So, you know, so, and I've seen a number of other patients that basically come in saying, you know, my chest is feeling kind of tight. I think I'm having some trouble breathing, and are dead 2 or 3 hours later from clotting, because the blood itself is clotting in their lungs. So no, it's not a hoax. Yes, this exists, and it's different in everybody. And admittedly, 96% of the people are going to have a low-grade fever, are going to feel sick and have some myalgia, some muscle aches for a couple of weeks, and it's going to go away. But you don't know if you're going to be in that other percent. And yes, we know that if you're elderly, if you're diabetic, that you may be a little more at risk to get the really bad symptoms or death. But I'll tell you, most of the people that are coming in really sick that are between 30 and 50 or younger are young, obese people.
Yeah.
And obesity seems to be a main caveat of you not doing well. And we don't know whether that's just because you already have increased work to breathe because of the weight on your chest. There may be a little less elasticity of the lungs, or you may be a little more easy to fatigue when breathing gets hard. But between obesity and people just, you know, having this clotting disorder from it, seems to be what's actually killing people that are coming in fatal. So.
Well, and let's start kind of cracking the nut a little bit on that, Doc. We've been covering this with you since the very beginning, since we first heard about things coming over this way. To know that right now we don't have, I mean, there are vaccine studies going on, but we don't have a vaccine necessarily like in grasp yet. And it's one of those, how do we start to recognize these things ahead of time? What should we be looking for in our family? What should we be doing to try and protect you? I mean, of course, other than washing hands, wearing a mask, minimizing that kind of stuff, what can we be doing to, I guess, kind of further this cause, and what should we be on the lookout for?
Well, see, and that's where it's kind of a fine line, because, you know, even the cities, you know, you go to California, they had some of the most stringent shutdowns there were, and they're spiking. You know, and it's the bad thing with a virus like this is it's not like Passover. You know, you can't just put the lamb's blood on the door and hide, you know, and then the virus is going to come creeping through your town and go, well, you know, nobody to kill in this town. Let's move to the next town. Then you can come out and there's no more virus. It doesn't work that way. Once the virus is basically starting to infect a species, it's going to continue to infect that species until there's enough people actually producing antibodies that the virus just kind of loses its infectability, I guess, or its infectiousness, and kind of goes away that way. And that's called herd immunity. And, you know, you'll see a lot of people go, well, you know, a herd immunity means opening and just accepting that a bunch of people die. Well, unfortunately, with this virus, there's three kinds of people. People that had it, people that have it, and people that are going to get it.
Yep.
And, I mean, it's and there's going to be a lucky few that probably aren't exposed to it at all. But if you're lucky, you get a mild exposure, your body's able to make antibodies, and you kind of fight it off, and you may end up with a positive test but never have any symptoms at all. But there are going to be the unfortunate few that get really sick and get the clotting or get the heart attack or get the ARDS, you know, from the bad pneumonia that comes along with it. Now, the one good thing is we have figured out now that if you end up oxygen dependent or, God forbid, ventilator dependent, that, you know, initially some of the reports are saying that it looked like steroids weren't going to do much good. Well, as it turns out, there is one particular steroid that does increase your chances of surviving once you're oxygen dependent or ventilator dependent by about 48 or 50%, and that's dexamethasone. And they found that if you catch it, now it won't work as a preventative, but once you are to a point where you're in the hospital and you're needing oxygen, that if you do 6 milligrams of dexamethasone IV a day, you know, usually for a week to 10 days, that it does seem to be actually doing some good. Because, you know, as we've talked about before, what this virus does to kill you as a respiratory virus is it creates a cytokine storm in the lungs. It's such a massive amount of inflammation that your lungs just basically give out. And that's why you end up on a ventilator or, worse yet, ECMO, which is extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, which is basically purgatory. I mean, it's truly a last resort life-saving measure and usually doesn't work. But the dexamethasone does seem to be helping get people off ventilators. Well, now we're seeing those tertiary symptoms that happen where, okay, now you've survived, you came off of a vent. Well, now you're having clotting disorders, that are causing strokes, that are causing minor heart attacks, that are causing cardiomyopathies, you know, that are causing a bunch of other problems that may be crippling down the line, but you are surviving the hospital onslaught. The other first option, if you do get sick, as soon as you start running a fever and you get a positive test, probably is still worthwhile to start the Z-Pak and start the Plaquenil. Now, that's where the politics have came in, because CNN and all these media outlets, you know, they really didn't want Plaquenil to be effective, because as soon as Trump came out saying, I think Plaquenil is effective, well, most of the liberal press is going to make sure they take the opposite take. And they did. So, but we do have a handful of studies that say Plaquenil does work early, got a handful of studies that says it doesn't. Honestly, we've had very few antivirals that really have worked. We've had none so far that have worked on coronaviruses. And for your listeners, coronavirus is what causes a common cold.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, we've to date not been able to do anything about the common cold or cure it. So zinc seems to help. There's a study that came out actually just today showing that kimchi actually will, you know, cut your chances of getting a bad infection by 30%, which kimchi, as it turns out, back in the swine flu days, they found out the reason they knew kimchi had antiviral effects is because there was one area where the chickens were actually fed kimchi at a chicken farm. Well, those chickens, not a one of them ever died of bird flu when all the other chickens around them died from it. So a little bit of kimchi every day, probably not going to hurt you.
If I got to throw a little bit of kimchi on my food daily, I'm not going to say that's a horrible thing, you know? And like I was saying,
you know, it's definitely an acquired taste, bro.
Well, yeah. I mean, so's sauerkraut, so's malt vinegar sauce. But you know what? I bet you if you sat back and like shot back a pack of like Long John Silver's malt vinegar sauce a day, you probably wouldn't get it either. It's vinegar. Nothing lives in vinegar. That's why red wine is good for you. It's vinegar. Like, it's grape juice that's already started to turn to vinegar. It's just how far down the process is it?
Yeah.
Well, and of course there's antioxidants and vitamins and things like that. But it's also...
And there's some other goodies in kimchi, too. There's some other phytokines and stuff.
Well, cabbage. It's one of the best vegetables for you.
Yeah, and it, you know what? And it's a lot of people aren't going to like kimchi, but you know what? Having a bite of kimchi every day, if it kind of protects you, you know, not a bad thing.
Yeah, yeah,
you
exactly.
Know, zinc has shown to protect you. Wear a mask. Yeah, and that's the kind of the bad thing for us as healthcare workers. You know, we're kind of trying to stay on the front lines of things too, because like I said, this was a bat virus. We've never had to deal with this virus in human beings before.
Yeah, precisely.
And even veterinarians weren't treating this particular type of bat from Southwest China that they brought up to Wuhan, because that bat didn't live anywhere near Wuhan. They had to bring it to Wuhan to research on it. So, you know, we're kind of having to find out as we go. And what we're finding out is this virus attacks everybody differently, and it depends on your existing state of health.
Yeah.
As to what symptoms you get. And then we've got to figure out how to circumferentially treat them, because we really don't have anything specifically that treats the virus other than remdesivir. And remdesivir is in short supply, and you've got to be pretty ill to be able to get it in a hospital. But they are showing that the combination of remdesivir and dexamethasone, or Decadron is the trade name, is doing some good as far as getting people off ventilators.
Yeah.
But the key is to not get yourself into a predicament where you end up needing a ventilator. And that's where as soon as you get sick, get a test, because a lot of these pharmacies now, you have to have a positive COVID test to get Plaquenil.
Yeah.
The other drug that's been shown to kind of help kill the virus or curtail the virus is ivermectin, which is, you know, what, you know, you're kind of a farm boy. It's what we use to worm horses and cattle. But there is a human version of it too. And ivermectin in one dose, early on, does seem to be a pretty good preventative, which is why they're not letting you get it unless you can prove you own a horse at Tractor Supply now, because people were buying it off the shelves.
Yeah. Well, I
want to state that right now for your listeners. Do not do that. What you're getting at Tractor Supply is dosed for horses.
Yeah.
And that's nowhere near
totally
the human dose of ivermectin. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you take that tube of ivermectin paste from Tractor Supply, the drug's going to kill you, not the virus.
Precisely. It's not quite like, you know, you're dosing yourself with penicillin from Tractor Supply or something along those lines, you know. That is something totally different.
They are finding out that early on, if you do an inhaled steroid or you do a Medrol dose pack, along with a Z-Pack and Plaquenil, if you can curtail the initial inflammatory response, then you may be able to tough this out at home and never actually end up in a hospital on a ventilator, unless you're one of these people who ends up throwing clots. And the minute you start having some chest pain or some breathing trouble, you better get to an ER, because you're about to need some serious hospital help at that point.
Yeah, precisely. And that's something that the last part of the show, folks, make sure to stay tuned. We've got a great boots on the ground report from Houston Methodist Hospital from Zachary Londine, my cousin. And that's a lot of what he's saying, is that fortunately, we did not have a whole lot of wave one. We got a lot of wave two. And because of that, we get to lean on the research that New York has done. A lot of doctors and nurses from New York have come down to work in the COVID wards to kind of pass this knowledge of treatment along. But very much the same thing he was saying, where people exhibit different symptoms. It's not necessarily something where it's nailed down precisely by the symptoms. you know, or symptomatically alone. You have to have the test done. And yeah, it's just, it's really good to see the fact that we have found some great preventative measures. We have found some great on the front line treatment for things, you know. And we've said it before here on the show, like you were saying earlier, it is much more akin, it's a coronavirus. Coronavirus is not the flu. That's a common cold. So, you know, the fact of us finding a cure-all, a magic bullet, a silver bullet that's going to just take care of it, very unlikely. Even the director of the World Health Organization came out and said that the world needs to learn to live and coexist with COVID-19. Coexist was the big word.
Well, and
it ain't because ain't going anywhere.
They also decided that they've also decided that there's three kinds of people in the world. You know,
yeah.
Had it, have it, and getting it.
Yep.
Yep. But and that's why, you know, anybody that knows me knows I'm for smaller government and less government intrusion into our lives. I'm,
sure.
I'm all about that.
Same.
But I mean, this virus exists. Unfortunately, how
it's
it came to
thing.
Be doesn't matter right now.
Nope.
It's on us, and it is killing some of us. And so wear a mask, help protect yourself and protect others. Try to stay out of big groups. The government does have to reopen stuff. I mean, people can't just continue not to work. I mean, they have to work. Everybody's got bills to pay. I mean, the government's not going to be there to keep handing out money. So we're going to have to figure out a way to get people back in the workplace, get kids back in school. What you do hear on the news is true as far as that. Yes, there are some pediatric cases. Do they equal the number of adult cases? Not
no.
anywhere close. Kids don't seem to transmit it as easily, and they don't seem to be very symptomatic when they get it, for the most part. Now, there's always going to be exceptions to the rule. That's why I even hesitated going over that tonight, because I know I'm going to get berated.
Yeah.
Well, I know a kid that almost died.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, well, there are going to be some of those cases, but for the most part, kids don't get it that bad.
Yep.
And
that's
and,
all the studies
I mean,
done internationally as of right now, from France, Switzerland, Sweden, Japan, all over the place, is quite literally the fact of it's not that children don't get it, it's that they get it in a much lower number, and that they don't seem to symptomatically pass it on or even pass it on.
Well, and what a lot of people don't think about, too, is, you know, we had kids out of school for what, about 3 months leading up to the summer. And, you know, parents need to go to work. And, you know, for a lot of kids in poor neighborhoods, the only time they're eating is at school, too.
Absolutely.
So,
that's the only time they're getting
and,
three squares a day. They're at least getting two at school.
Yep. So, I mean, I think it's going to be important for schools to figure out a way to safely keep the teacher safe and keep the kids safe, whether it's a, like some schools are looking at, you know, maybe virtual learning in 2 days a week in classroom, where it gives them time to sterilize the school in between each school day.
Yeah.
But, I mean, eventually we're going to have to just say the virus is here. I mean, we're all going to get exposed eventually, and just open everything up probably is what's eventually going to have to come. Realistically, now they do have vaccines that are currently being trialed. As a matter of fact, you can sign up for a trial in San Antonio.
Yep.
In Houston, Texas, they'll actually pay you $2,000 to sign up for a trial.
Now, hey, all my
AV
buddies, there you go. Go take a bullet for one of us.
Yeah. Well, and this is, right now it's the Moderna vaccine. It's not the AstraZeneca vaccine.
Yeah.
It has shown some efficacy in animal studies. So now the next phase is to determine whether or not it's safe in humans. You know, I mean, if you know, I'm not going to give my opinion on whether or not someone should take a vaccine,
no.
yay or nay, because that's a personal opinion. You need to look at your, basically, your lifestyle and your comorbidities, your health problems, and
that's
and
right.
say, is am I someone that's high enough risk to take the risk of you know, being a lab rat for this vaccine? And you might be. You might decide that, yeah, I want to take that risk and I want to try to do this. Or you may,
well,
you know, be anti-vaccine. But
and
either,
hey,
I mean, that needs to be your choice.
There's a whole load of people out there, and correct me if I'm wrong, Doc, because, well, you're a doctor. But My understanding is that they use egg whites.
Yeah.
So if you're allergic to eggs, you can't really get a vaccine. Yes or no?
Yeah, and no, that is true. And yeah. Most viruses are grown in an egg culture.
Yep.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's for certain.
You know?
And I'm not, your listeners know, I'm not pro-vaccine and I'm not anti-vaccine. I'm pro-choice when it comes to that.
You're a doctor. You're pro-choice for your body. Imagine that.
Yeah, well, and I know there's a lot of fallacy out there that I see on both sides of that. Can vaccines mess you up? Certainly they can. I mean, I've personally had friends that have got Guillain-Barré from vaccines and wound up paralyzed on a ventilator until it wears off.
You know, we wouldn't have a vaccine reaction hotline, mind you, folks. That means like, that's how you remember the old Mr. Yuck stickers where it was like the poison control hotline in case you put Drano down your throat accidentally as a kid. There is a hotline for at the CDC for
on the other FDA. Side of that token, there's a reason we're not all dying of smallpox and
that's
polio
right.
anymore, and it's from vaccines.
There's a reason we aren't all walking around with polio.
Yeah.
It's because of vaccines. Absolutely. Science is science. That's what I love about you, Doc, is despite your books, despite anything else, despite any personal political beliefs, you were a doctor first. And you're not going to tell people that this thing is being generated by or being adversely affected by their new phones. Or despite the episodes we've done on 5G and the horrible things it may possibly do because we haven't fully researched it yet. Despite that, neither one of us are promoting the fact that this thing comes from 5G waves or is propagated by 5G waves or multiplies faster by 5G waves. What we're saying is there is an illness out there. Take care of yourselves. Take care of your families. Wear a mask. Wash your hands. Be socially responsible. Do not be a Momo at this moment in life, people. These are the moments that literally define us, not only as humanity, but they define the moment legally. Legally. And that's the important thing. Because if we don't take it upon ourselves, if we don't take the responsibility and accountability on ourselves, which is really what America is all about. Like I said earlier, we live in that beautiful place where you can wake up and make any stupid decision you want. And that's such a beautiful thing. But you have to remember that there's accountability with that.
Well, and that's like I tell some of my patients, well, I don't believe in this. I don't know anybody who's actually had it. And, you know, I think it's a hoax and the government trying to control us. And I was like, well, you know what? I can write that on your tombstone when you die of it. Because, you know, whether the government released this or the government is implicated in the research that was done on it, which it looks like it probably was. You know, either way, this virus is on us now. So the way you save yourself and the way you save your family is be smart, wear a mask, stay away from big groups. You know, don't be around sick people. Try to minimize your exposure out in public in big groups. Stay home as much as you can. You know, try to go back to work, and especially if your work is willing to, you know, make allowances to, you know, have cubicles or be apart, wear your mask, use disinfectant on your hands, wash your hands. You know, wipe down after you use the gas pump or after you grab stuff. I mean, the reason, and I'll tell you, the reason strict quarantine, and I know a lot of the political people are calling for a complete close down. We need to close everything down again. Well, they want that economy as bad as they can get it right up until Election Day. Well, the reason quarantining doesn't work, complete quarantine only works if you live out in the country, you have your own well, you're raising chickens for eggs, you're growing vegetables and you have meat where you don't have to leave the house.
You are fully self-sustained. Yeah. You need no infrastructure.
The reason California and all these states who have really strict quarantines and close downs still spiked a bunch of numbers is because like we did in Texas, we closed down for a little while. HEB, our main grocery chain, changed its hours from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. All that does is, and Walmart did the same. So So all that does is funnel everybody into the grocery stores in even tighter constraints, because everybody has to go get their toilet paper and their groceries and stuff in between those hours. So you double the number of people that are in the grocery store at any given hour. So you all get exposed as you're getting funneled into grocery stores and department stores. So, I mean, severe quarantine really doesn't work unless you're rural and self-sufficient, which is not many of us anymore.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, not many of us are living out on the farm road. Not many of us are living out where we got to drive, you know, 2-3 acres to go borrow a cup of sugar from the neighbor. Like I was telling you before the show, most of us are in the situation where we're surrounded by houses, like within less than 10, 15 feet away from each other in some neighborhoods. You know, some neighborhoods, quite literally, you are close enough across fence lines with your back windows to be violating the 6-foot rule or 10-foot rule, you know?
Well, and, you know, I come pretty close to self-sufficient. I raise bees. We do our own honey. We've got chickens. We do our own eggs.
I got to get me a jar of that honey.
You know, but... You know, we still got to go to HEB to get certain stuff.
That's right.
You know, or if you want vegetables that you don't have, and that's the key, is everybody's like, well, you got, you know, wear your mask in there and everything. Well, you know, everybody's rubbing their hands all over those avocados to find the perfect one for guacamole that
day.
You know, because you don't want to come
touching
home with
the
a hard avocado, man.
Just grab the, hey, how about this? Think about if you want some, like, guacamole in 2 or 3 days and just go pick 3 avocados and be done with it. Like, you've got to alter the way you do everything. And that's exactly what the head of the World Health Organization was saying when he was saying that we have to learn to coexist with it. Like, this is like our neighbor who like my neighbor, decides every other weekend to invite 20 other people over to his house other than the 9 that live there. So it's one of those, like, I can't do anything about it. For me to try to do anything about it would be for me to be the bad guy. So all I can do is do me. Take care of me. Mitigate what I am doing in the world. That's all we can do.
You know, and for the anti-government people making you wear a mask, and, you know, it's not trying to enact martial law or anything like that. It truly is. We've got to... You know, and if you're one of those people where you don't know anybody that's tested positive and you don't know anybody that's been affected by this,
God bless
good
you.
For you.
God bless
you.
Because
I am seeing people. I have had friends die from it. And I am seeing the people. I typically see 30 or 40 people a day. I'm having probably 20% of my patient population call in and reschedule in 14 or 21 days because they're calling in sick because they're positive with COVID.
Yeah.
You know, and at least they know not to come in.
Well, so, and that's been one of the interesting things that I really wanted to cover with you tonight, Doc, was the fact that we have seen, especially because a lot of social activity, a lot of other things, a lot of other factors, rather, contributed to a large, sharp spike in numbers. But while we have seen this spike in numbers and transmission, we have seen almost as staggering a drop in the mortality rate.
And that is due to herd immunity, and that's because we're seeing younger people come in that are not fatally ill. They're coming in sick, and they're sick enough to sometimes need hospitalization. But, you know, we're getting a little better at treating it, and it does seem to be lessening in its severity, at least in the people that come in. Now, that's not to say that we don't have the occasional case like my friend's wife. You know, she was turning the corner. I mean, when I talked to her Sunday night, fever was down. She sounded good. Her throat was clear. Her throat was clearing up. Unfortunately, she got the clotting aspect of it, and she clotted up.
And no previous issues with that before.
No previous issues
not
with
like,
that before.
Not
this
like
virus
she was,
will make you clot.
Not like she was on Coumadin, you know, or some other typical anti-clotting medication. Not like she had had a stroke previously, you know, or embolism.
Had she been on an anti, had she been on an anti-clotting medication, she probably would have been okay. Because that's one of the things that they're kind of starting empirically now with COVID patients that end up hospitalized, is going ahead and putting them on heparin, you know, or putting them on a drug that doesn't allow you to coagulate. And honestly, you know, can't say that this is from the CDC. This is strictly my own thinking. But, you know, for people who have had heart issues, either bypass surgery or heart attacks, I mean, they always put you on a full strength or an 81 milligram aspirin, enteric coated aspirin. Yep. Tell you what, right now, probably wouldn't be a bad idea for most people to be on enteric aspirin, because there's several different arms of the clotting cascade. There's several different chemical arms of it. Well, aspirin treats one of those, and it basically makes your platelets slippery where they won't stick together and form a clot.
Yeah.
Probably not a bad idea right now. If you're in the workforce, you're still going to work every day and having to be around people, probably wouldn't be a bad idea to get on a full strength enteric coated aspirin.
And like you were saying, you know, hey man, if you're an American male over 40, just keep them baby aspirin around you and pop a couple a day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
It's just a good habit to be in. I know heart issues run on both sides of my family. It's what took both of my grandfathers. My dad's got a really pretty zipper in the middle of his chest. So it's one of those, like, yeah, I keep a regimen of things like that in my system just as preventative, because after a certain age, you should be doing those things anyway. And if this is,
make sure you get the enteric coated aspirin, because that way it won't give you heartburn. So.
That's right. And if I got to eat a bottle of kimchi a week, that there are worse things in the world to have to do to keep myself well, you know. Oh no, the doctor said eat kimchi. that's like, oh wow, doc said I need more kraut on my hot dog. What are you gonna do?
And for those of your listeners that think that's BS, you can actually look that study up.
Yeah, I did.
And it was specifically
After you mentioned it earlier today.
Honestly, you know, eating a little kimchi every day, taking your aspirin, if the kimchi helps fight off the virus and the aspirin keeps you from clotting, boom.
Just apparently keep the spoonful of sugar away, because the BDs don't help with it.
No.
If you've got diabetes, it apparently, like, conflagrates the issue with COVID.
Obesity and high blood sugar, hyperglycemia, that virus seems to feed on sugar in your bloodstream like fertilizer. So, if you're diabetic, go out of your way to control your blood sugars. I mean, depending on what regimen your doctor has you on, get your finger sticker out or get your Dexcom, out. And make sure you're checking your blood sugar and controlling your blood sugar, because if your blood sugar is high, you're going to have a bad outcome. So
yeah, precisely. And that's just it. We have seen more than one compounded issue medically where if you have pre-existing conditions, should you happen to get COVID, it swings you much more in the direction of being in the trouble zone, being one of that quite literally statistically 0.001, like way down there. It's a small percentage of people who hit that mortality rate. And that's the good hope. That's the good thing. Not necessarily the exposure rate. Like we focus a lot on the exposure rate. What we're not focusing on is, very few people die from it. Very few people die from it. And yes, there is a lot of hype, but at the same time, there is a lot of good science going on, a lot of good, hopeful things coming out of it. Like I said earlier, we are finding some great preventative measures as well as some fantastic treatments once people have it. The issue is really this curveball that it seems to throw with almost every single person where, you know, much like we've said in previous episodes with you, Doc, it's much, much more likely that we will not see the silver bullet a vaccine, or possibly even a vaccine in the realm of what exists for the flu, because of its rate of mutation, because of the fact that it is so much more like the common cold in the way that it reacts, in the way that it settles in, does what it does.
And that's the truth. And then, you know, once they work up this vaccine for the current common mutation that they're actually working on now, by the time it comes around again, if it does, and it probably will come around again in another season, and it may be a slightly different mutation where the antibodies that you generate from the vaccine don't work. But, you know, even though they've, you know, it's Operation Warp Speed, I think is what their government's calling it with the vaccines they're working on now. But, you know, that's not to say that that vaccine is going to work, you know, next year. So, I mean, I think the herd immunity aspect of it is probably going to be the more important aspect to get. You know, so you at least you have similar antibodies to possibly fight off the next recurrence of it or the next mutation of it.
Yeah, yeah, precisely, because we've got to do something. And we've had this discussion before how herd immunity is really one of the ways that we need to be going, one of the ways that we need to be thinking about it. And it's not that that dire mentality of, hey, you know, well, we're going to have to kill some people to save a bunch of people. That's not necessarily what we're saying, but the fact is a bunch of people are dying. A bunch of people are going to die. We have not seen, despite any quarantine time or anything like that, a drastic drop in mortality rate. We've seen an increase in transmission, but we have not seen a correlating increase in mortality rate. And that's what we need to consider, is that it's strange to see the fact that there's not that following bell curve, you know, that the two do not seem to come together like that. And you would really think that they would cross paths much more in the line graph that would exist, you know, but the numbers don't really seem to, and it's strange. And even right now, I've got up on screen from KSST, health experts respond to conflicting WHO information regarding asymptomatic spread of COVID-19. And this is out of Behar County. Like, that's your backyard. Like you said earlier, we have seen conflicting information coming from the World Health Organization, from the CDC, from the government, from local governments. We finally, how many months down the road and how many episodes, Doc, finally all of them have kind of come up around and said the same thing. Finally.
Yeah, and that's why I told you early on that most of us as practicing physicians don't place a lot of faith in the World Health Organization. That's mostly a political institution and part of the UN.
Well, it would have been nice if they went and investigated anything in January or February.
Yeah, and CDC we kind of take with a grain of salt, but the CDC typically usually gets around to seeing what those of us in the trenches are doing right, and then that kind of becomes their guideline. So, the CDC usually eventually comes across the right thing, but they may come across with the wrong thing initially, and most of us as practitioners kind of pick up on that. And, you know, because what we're doing is we're seeing the people in real time that are coming in with it and having to experiment with what we've got to see what works and what doesn't, what'll save somebody's life, what'll ameliorate the virus, you know, because we've got to deal with drugs that we have. If you think you're going to be taken into some little hospital in El Paso or Luling, Texas, or somewhere, and you're going to get a dose of remdesivir, well, you're mistaken. You know, that's not going to happen. You know, so, you know, we've got to work with the agents that we have access to and the ventilators and the ventilator settings that we have access to. So, but the Decadron and the remdesivir does seem to be working as far as getting people off ventilators. And the other thing that troubles me is you've got the political side that are saying, well, the federal government needs to come out with a mandate and make everybody wear masks. Well, if the government did that, then everybody would say, well, the government's overstepping its bounds. I mean, there's no right answer for the federal government to take.
Exactly.
So the best thing is to do what they're doing, which is saying, let the governors decide, because the governors are closer to the people on the ground in their state. Because the federal government's right. If you live on the border of Canada and northern Montana, you probably don't need to wear a mask every day, because the only other guy you're going to be around is probably 100 square miles away from you, and you'll have to meet at the feed store.
Yeah, exactly. So, there's like 10,000 people in Montana.
Yeah.
Like, Montana is the example of why the Electoral College exists.
Yeah.
Like, textbook. There you have it. You want to know why? There it is. And, you know, like I said earlier, there were, when this thing first started, Dr. John, we had the conversation, you and I privately, and you and I on the show, about the what could happen if a state of emergency was declared, and why the president was so hesitant on declaring that state of emergency, and that people really probably didn't have the right concept of what that meant, what the possible fallout could be. And we still aren't faced with the full fallout of a state of emergency that we are still in right now. Yet still, when the president, just to kind of loop it around to the beginning conversation, when federal entities start using the power at their behest, with or without a federal emergency, people get up in arms.
Yep.
So it's really interesting to see how quick that pendulum swings, both politically, mentally, and belief-wise for the American people. And I think this is really an eye-opening moment, just to see that infrared ultraviolet didactic in mentality, and the fact that extremism will always be met with extreme measures and will do nothing but beget extremism.
Well, and then you have everything compounded by a major media that is basically not reporting news anymore, but basically pushing an agenda.
Like the head of the DHS said, good God, report the facts. Please, please, just report the facts. Stop reporting hearsay. Stop reporting conjecture. Stop chasing a headline and the clickbait and the click online, and that cooling response of our brain of 30 milliseconds until the next pump of dopamine into our brain because we liked or right swiped or, you know, frowny faced or whatever, you know. That's conflagrating things. It's obviously not helping. And the fact that you are the media and you are not reporting the facts means you are detrimental. Period.
And that's why I think it's important for your listeners, if you happen to find yourself testing positive for COVID, go talk to your doctor.
Please.
Don't get your information from CNN
or
MSNBC.
Anybody.
Because as physicians, we're not basing our scientific decisions or our medical decisions on what we hear on CNN or MSNBC. At least most of us aren't.
Or Fox, you know, so, or OWN.
Yeah, or Fox.
Or
because, when Plaquenil turned out to be, you know, relatively effective for early on COVID, you know, because Trump came out with it, of course, all the major media started putting out how dangerous Plaquenil is. I do pain management. Pain medicine and anesthesia.
Yep.
I've got patients that have been on Plaquenil for years, dosed correctly, even in long term, its side effect profile is pretty safe. For the 5 days you're going to need to take it for COVID, it's not going to have any side effects to speak of, probably, unless you've already got a heart condition, but we screen you for that before we start you on it.
Sure.
Yes, it can have some increased heart side effects when given with a Z-Pak. But that's why you do an EKG ahead of time to make sure you don't have the particular cardiac disorder that puts you at risk for that. So,
yeah.
I mean, talk to your physician, because we do know at least a little bit about what we're doing as far as early on treating this virus with what we've got. You know, and the thing is with the media is, you know, they're kind of pushing their own narrative that's more of an anti-Trump narrative based on the Plaquenil. But if you get sick with this virus, you know, you've got to try something. You know, so go to your physician and let him try what he's familiar with and the dosages that he's trained with, because that stuff is changing every day. Most of us are getting medical education pamphlets and emails and stuff from new studies every day to see what dosages or what medicine to try. So, I mean, don't just think that what you're watching on CNN is the gospel truth, because it's probably not.
Yeah.
Talk to your physician who's actually getting the medical literature, so he knows or she knows what to try, you know, to give you that's safe for you.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody's different. You know, I mean, you may have comorbidities that preclude you from getting one drug or another drug, and so a different drug has to be looked at or possibly tried. So, I mean, just if you get sick with it and you're bad enough and you're having trouble breathing and you think you need to go to the hospital, definitely go and listen to your physician, because we are trying to stay on the forefront of this fight. So,
yeah. Yeah, precisely. Trust the science. Trust the people in charge of the science. I have a question for a man in charge of the science right now. How long do you think it will be before we start seeing ads on TV for COVID medications or preventatives? Like, you know what I'm talking about, where it's like, ask your doctor today. You know, like, we've had the conversation, at what point did America become the attending physician and start doing that job of, hey, doc, you know, I was thinking I could use this med. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, it'll eventually come. I mean, you're already seeing a little bit of that. I mean,
sure.
I've noticed that, you know, on my Facebook feed, pretty much 20 times a day I get some different zinc preparation come up, because I mean, they have shown that zinc can kind of help protect you from getting it.
Yeah.
You know, in some studies it's shown to do nothing, but that has turned up. Now, what you are going to start seeing here probably within the week are advertisements to be part of the vaccine trial
study. Yeah.
You know, because those have already started. Matter of fact, at the University of Texas Health Science Center in San Antonio, they're already looking for, I think, 30,000 volunteers here. I think they're looking for 60,000 in Houston. And that's for the Moderna vaccine. Mm. So that's already being given to humans. And like I said, you know, I know the anti-vaccine people absolutely don't take a vaccine. I would never say that. Some of the vaccines we have do work. I know everybody kind of points to the Amish and they go, well, the Amish don't get vaccines and they do just fine. Well,
the Amish also don't leave their community.
Yeah. Well,
period.
And as you know, I go hang out with the Amish every year.
Yeah.
And I have friends that are Amish in Southern Indiana, and I go there twice a year, and I actually live with the Amish, and I do some medicine up there with the Amish. Yes, the Amish do get vaccines. They
Absolutely.
Just don't let their kids get them all at once.
That's right.
They space them out.
That's right.
Yeah.
And if you have that conversation with any competent doctor, they will be willing to do the same for you.
Yep.
And that's just it. Like, we really do need to reevaluate the way that we live with each other, the way that we interact with each other, the way that we go about interacting with the world around us. Doc, thank you. Yeah, I guess one last question related to the last one. How long do you think it will be before we see ads from lawyers asking, have you been harmed by a COVID vaccine?
Not only are you going to see that, but the other thing you're going to see is lawyers having ads saying, well, did your work
mm-hmm.
open up too soon?
Were you forced
COVID
to go back to
in
work?
The workplace? Yeah.
Were you
did
forced?
You get COVID in a restaurant or a gym?
Yeah.
And that is why a lot of these companies have kind of gone ahead and kind of slowly again complied with a lot of the opening orders and stuff, because that'll be the next thing coming is suing the places where you think you got it. Now, how they're going to prove you got it there, I have no idea.
Yeah.
But that will, if once the lawyers figure out a way to make money on it, because, you know, the way you make money in law is a lot of times you settle out of court, but it's cheaper not to fight.
Yep.
You know, and the lawyers know that. So, I mean, if you've got an insurance policy, an umbrella policy that covers that kind of stuff, and somebody says, well, I got coronavirus sitting in that Taco Bell, well, pretty good chance Taco Bell is going to throw $10,000 at you to make you go away rather than spend $100,000 to fight it. So,
well, and that's just
and
it.
That's sad.
I've had the conversation with people about my industry. You know, I'm a live AV technician. Guaranteed we will probably have to have some kind of antibody check card where in order to get into these events regularly, in order to be traveling regularly, things like that, you will have to have a recent antibody test, you know.
Well, and the Screen Actors Guild is doing the same thing. To be on a film set, you have to have a negative test.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to be masked when you're in close quarters, and the shooting has to be, you know, certain numbers of people in a shot. So.
Yep. Yep. And it's, you know, like we said earlier, we are going to have to learn to coexist with this. We're going to have to learn how to adjust our lives to fit it, not the other way around. We aren't going to be able to go gangbusters on this, y'all. And unfortunately, there are worse things out there. But this will not be the last one. It will not be. We heard that with H1N1. We heard that with the avian flu. We heard that with numerous things down the line, that this will not be the last one. COVID will not be the last one. The question is, how do we deal with it? How do we move forward? How do we come up with preventatives? How do we come up with treatments? How do we continue on in a modicum of life as we knew it with this new reality?
And maybe humans will finally get the idea to stop messing with other species' viruses. Let that species have their virus and let us have ours, and stop tinkering with, you know, with biology and nature.
God, yes. God, yes. Because, you know, just the gain of function research, and I've got it up from Asia Times, everybody, just the gain of function research. If you want to go look this up, just look up literally Google Asia Times gain of function research United States. Like I said earlier, we funded $3.7 million in projects approved by Trump's COVID-19 guru Dr. Anthony Fauci in 2015 after the U.S. ban imposed on quote monster germ research. So after we put a moratorium on gain-of-function research here in the United States for our labs because of an almost outbreak, if you recall. Because of an almost outbreak. What did we do but go, well, we still need the gain-of-function research, right? So we outsource it. And we give it to another lab. Not that we stop the gain-of-function research that we put a moratorium on because it's horrifying and could end mankind. we'll just take it over there. There's a lot of water between us, you know? So.
Yeah. And give it to a country that wants to hasten our demise anyway. Yeah.
Like. Yeah. Mind-blowing, mind-numbing, and to know that the, like we said, the last episode you were on, and the good doctor that was arrested from MIT in January, and this is in the Department of Justice files, folks, go look it up.
like, or no, Harvard, sorry, not MIT, Harvard, the Harvard doctor who had members of the Chinese military working in his lab, actively went to Wuhan, China, and started up a lab focusing in nano research. Just wild, wild correlations, crazy things going on. The one thing that we do know as fact is that we funded gain-of-function research right here in our own country on coronavirus. And then when we said we should no longer do gain-of-function research, we decided that we should just no longer do it here. And we moved it elsewhere. And we gave government grants and funding to do it. So like we said earlier, should it come to the point that this comes out, that it was accidentally released, allowed to happen, but accidental release, we won't find out for numerous years. Right now, it's the fact of what do we do? How do we deal with it? How do we live with it? How do we protect ourselves? Last bits of advice for our audience before we let, because you are a doctor. You've got early calls in the morning and the like. So we're going to let you go. But last words of advice for our audience out there who now unabashedly knows that neither their host nor one of their favorite guests believe that this thing is a hoax. It's not. How do we deal with the reality, Doc?
Chances are if you get it, you're going to be okay. But with the percentages, if you do get sick and you start having trouble breathing, call the ER, tell them that you've had a positive test, tell them that your lungs are getting tight, and get in to see them. Talk to your doctor. If you have a family doctor, make sure you talk to them. Get your testing done. If there's no considerations that keep you from being able to take aspirin every day, take an aspirin every day, at least block that part of your clotting cascade, because clotting is what's killing a lot of the people from this virus. I'm convinced looking at the study that eating a little kimchi every day probably does help protect you. Having zinc, nutritional diet so you stay healthy. If you're a diabetic, watch your blood sugars. Take your medicine, do your finger sticks, make sure your blood sugar stays low. I mean, and obviously that's going to mean cutting your carbs, cutting your sweets, cutting your sugar. You want to keep your blood sugar as low as you can safely right now while this is going around. If you get sick, call your doctor and take your doctor's advice, because we are being at least fed the latest research and the latest treatments and stuff to kind of prevent it. Wear your mask when you're out in public. I mean, even if you're going to be more than 10 feet away, so if you're in the grocery store or Walmart,
leave your mask on.
Wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. That does keep from spreading it. Just the basics. I mean, that's, you know, this will all go away eventually, but right now it's not, and we've got to deal with it.
Well, and that's just it. Wash yourselves, you filthy beasts. Just keep yourself clean. Keep yourself, like, maintain personal space. Stop getting up in people's grills. Stay the hell away from people. Don't touch them. Don't touch their things. You know, all these rules that we learned in kindergarten, just obey them. Just obey them. And we'll all be okay. So, once again, not a fake thing. Not a conspiracy theory. Not even a theory. It's a thing that's actually happening in the world. You have a part in that. You have a part to play in that. Take care of yourselves. Take care of your families, folks. Doctor, thank you so much for everything. Thank you so much for always coming on moment's notice to come on the show, share your vast knowledge and your opinions with our audience. We greatly appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Chris.
Well, you take care of yourself. I would normally say hold the line, but we do have this fantastic report from the front lines coming up right now. So I'm going to go ahead and let you go if you like. Feel free to stay tuned in right here on the line. You can hear this great report, Doc. Until next time, everybody, I'm going to go ahead and play this right now. Doc, we'll talk to you soon. Here is a frontline report from Zachary Londeen in Houston, Texas. He is typically a rotating OR nurse doing OR duty, things like that, and has been placed in the last week or so directly in the front lines of the COVID battle in Houston Methodist Hospital.
Let me say this again.
We have with us on the line today Zachary Londeen. He is a circulating OR nurse at Methodist Hospital in Houston, Texas. How are you, Zach?
Doing great, Chris. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely, man. As things have kind of developed, we've been watching them closely. Of course, we've had Dr. John Hall on, getting ready to have him on again this evening. But I found it interesting that you actually got departed from your normal OR duty to go actively help out in the COVID ward at your hospital the other day. What has that experience been like for you doing that for the last little bit?
Yeah, that's right. Like you said, I normally work in surgery, so I don't normally see a lot of the floor nursing experience, but we've been really short-staffed lately as far as a lot of our employees and coworkers are starting to test positive and starting to become symptomatic. So we still, they're getting sick, they can't come to work, but we still need staff to take care of these patients. So I've had to travel over to one of the units to help out with that. It's, as far as the experience, since I don't have a lot of background on the floor, they've got the units set up to where the nurses and the patient care associates that are actually actively taking hands-on care of the patient, they've got the unit divided up into like a hot and a cold zone, whereas the hot zone are like they're actually in there doing the patient care, and then the cold zone to where the nurse's station and the medication room and everything are. So what I've been doing, I've been in the cold zone, you know, pulling medications and supplies, doing whatever I can to help these nurses and these techs take care of these patients as well as I can. Now, that being said, we do all have to wear respirators on the unit because it can become an aerosolized condition if you're doing like nebulizer treatments and stuff. So we all wear respirators.
Right.
We all have to wear face shields. The nurses in the hot zones, they have to gown up every time they go into the room. In fact, they do it so much that they actually just stay in their gowns and just change gloves when they go into the different rooms. Because all of these patients have COVID already.
Yeah.
So the risk for cross-contamination of giving someone that's got COVID another case of COVID, obviously there's no need to change your gown. They just stay in their gowns and their PPE, and they just change their gloves as they go in and out of the room. But one of the hard things that's been about doing this is since I'm in such close proximity with these patients, I've actually had to take my wife over to stay with my parents for at least a couple weeks. I mean, she's 7 months pregnant, expecting our first child in September. And it was a very hard decision to make, but the risk of bringing it home to her and the baby was just too high. I wouldn't be able to forgive myself.
Well, no, absolutely not. That is the socially responsible and, I mean, just medically responsible thing to do. If you're quite literally right in the thick of it. You're all of 6 inches away from the hot zone. Literally, like you're across a wall from the hot zone.
It's not even a wall. It's just a piece of tape on the floor.
it's the lava barrier.
Yeah.
don't touch the lava and you'll be all right. But it, like you said, it's hard. Like we said in our last COVID update episode with my good friend Jeff Ellis up in Maine, who is a respiratory therapist, I pray for those guys because those guys right now are being faced with hard, hard battlefield-type decisions that they are not used to being faced with.
Absolutely.
It's when you're talking about hospitals that are looking at max capacity, when you're talking about places that, what are we going to do? Rob ventilators from existing ICU patients? at that point, it literally becomes which case is worse, which one gets the ventilator. And those are decisions that doctors are just not necessarily trained to make.
We have some patients, like a lot of the unit that I'm working on was an observation unit, but it was converted to an intermediate medical unit to meet the needs of all these patients. But it's being considered as a high flow, high oxygen need unit. And almost all of these patients are on BiPAPs or CPAPs because they just can't get enough oxygen. And we're just getting to the point where we're telling patients, hey, if you have a BiPAP at home that you use to help you sleep, bring it with you.
Yes.
We're going to use yours so we can save the other machines for other patients that don't have one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, trying to take measures like that. What has the intake been like on positive cases for you guys over there? You said it's been about a week or so since you've been doing that?
Yeah. It's on the unit that I've been working on. It's like as fast as they get better, we move them out, and maybe an hour later we get another one in. When I went to lunch the other day to the cafeteria, I was coming back and I said, let me take the scenic route back to my unit. And I went and walked around, the other units. And when all of this originally started, the plan was we were going to have one unit dedicated for COVID units, which was our 2 North unit. And, I walked through there the other day, that unit was full. And I walked through the units adjacent to it, which is 2 East. That unit was full with all COVID patients, and you can tell which ones are COVID patients because they all have a yellow isolation gown hanging outside the room for the nurses and the techs to put on when they go into the room. All of those rooms had isolation gowns hanging outside of them. I went to the next adjacent unit, which was 2 North, or not 2 North, 2 West. All of those rooms had isolation gowns outside of them. And then, of course, you have the unit where I'm working on where it's like definitely all of them are confirmed positive. Our ICUs, as far as our ICUs are, the ICUs are full, but we're moving out patients every day that are getting better. But like I said, it's like a low down Hydra, one moves out, another one moves in to take its place.
Yeah. Yeah. And
so as of right now, we have 3 units that are full and, both of our ICUs are full.
Wow. Wow. And most of that is COVID relation.
Yeah. Most of it's COVID related. Yeah.
And now, granted, with that being the case, what has the virulence of this been like? What have the cases been like that, I guess, percentage wise in your eyes that have been major cases, fatal cases, things like that?
Well, we've actually seen a wide range of different effects. We have the patients that it treats them like a low-grade flu. Mm-hmm. It's those patients that don't have those underlying conditions that are in really good health, they can usually come out of it really well, and they don't need to come to the high flow or to the ICU units. But then you also have those patients that have those underlying conditions as well, and it's hitting them like a ton of bricks. All the patients that are on the unit that I work on, they all have BiPAPs. They all have some kind of underlying either pulmonary or circulatory condition that it just compounds on top of the virus, and it just makes it a lot worse.
Yeah.
So, but we're one of the good things about, I guess you can call it a good thing, but one of the things about this hitting our area at the time that it did is that we didn't get the initial punch of it. We're getting the second punch as far as we're not as bad off as New York was, because they were having to learn on the fly as like a baptism by fire kind of thing, how to treat these patients.
Yeah.
Well, we're able to take, and they've been coming down here. They've been sharing information back and forth with the hospitals in New York and those areas that were hit hard first on how to treat these patients, what worked for them. And we're actually seeing a great improvement. We're seeing a lower death rate, shorter stays in some cases, not all cases, but in some cases. And it's really been helpful to have that information to treat these patients.
Yeah, precisely. And that's what we've kind of been saying on the show the whole time, is it may be a good clip or a good piece before we see what will be known as a vaccine. Because, of course, it's a coronavirus. Other coronaviruses you may know of, folks, the common cold. Is there a vaccine for the common cold? That's how regularly this thing is mutating. So to find a cure-all, to find a magic sword that's going to just destroy COVID and it's gone, pretty doubtful. But to find new treatments, to be able to find new ways to battle it on the front once you're dealing with it, that is what we're gaining. And we're gaining it in droves. And like you're saying, it's producing great results right there on the front line in Houston. The fact that people from New York are coming down and showing this is how they dealt with it. Because like you're saying, we're very much dealing with that secondary wave right now that happened after the soft reopen of the state, which became, hey, everybody, let's go out and party at the bar.
Or on the river.
Or on the river. You know, like, seriously, folks, just wear a mask, wash your hands, stay 6 feet apart from people that you do not know or that you do not live with. Like, it's really not rocket math. It really isn't.
No.
It's some social responsibility on everybody's part. Like you were saying, it's been a hard decision for you to send your wife, Rebecca, over to your mom and dad's house while you're doing this service at the hospital. But it's what needs to be done. We know right now through numerous studies that children are not necessarily affected as hard if they catch COVID. It's been some really interesting documentation to come out on that. But there's still been a lot of question about in utero and things like that. So, good on you for taking the precaution and for doing that. That is the safety measure that needs to be taken. It's hard to make those decisions. It's hard to be in any kind of personal position. I now officially know, two people that have had COVID. They're all right. They're fine. I know one person who had a very, very close call with a family member. And it's out there. It's a real thing, folks. So take care of yourselves. Take care of your families. You know, what can people do, Zach? What kind of precautions? And this is kind of what I've been telling my mom about whenever she goes to physical therapy. What I've been trying to reassure my wife about is like, hey, you know, they got like a cleansing routine when they come into work and they got one when they leave. What can we adopt from that in our everyday life, Zach, that can kind of help curtail some of this as we venture out into the world for groceries, gasoline, you know, milk for the kids, stuff like that?
Right. Well, one of the things that you've been hearing, you know, we've been beating it like a dead horse, but I mean, it's a very important step in curtailing this virus is you have to wear a mask. Even if you're not symptomatic, you've been around people who aren't symptomatic who have possibly been in contact with someone who had it, and they therefore transfer it to you, and now you're transferring it to other people. If you wear the mask, it cuts down on that transmission rate drastically. That's the same reason we wear masks in surgery. Pathogens that we're breathing out during a surgery can get into the wounds of the patient or into their airway if it's not a secure airway. And that can come back as an infection, any type of infection. So wearing a mask is crucial to curtailing this thing. And if you can, don't go out. Like if you don't have to, stay at home, watch a movie, read a book, do something. Wash your hands as often as you can. Like we said last time I was on, the gold standard for hand hygiene is always going to be soap and water. But if you don't have that readily available, hand sanitizer is a good backup. As far as hand sanitizers go, there's a lot of different companies now that are starting to produce hand sanitizer. You want to make sure that you get a good one, because there have been studies that have shown that when the alcohol content of a hand sanitizer reaches 60% and below, its effectiveness drops drastically as far as killing bacteria and viruses. So you want to have those higher concentration hand sanitizers, which are like 60% and above, and they usually say it on the bottle. And if you can, like you said, if you have to go to the grocery store, try and utilize some of these grocery stores that have curbside pickup, where they'll
come
load them into the back of your car, where you don't have to go into the store and risk exposure like that.
That's right.
So, yeah, in a sense, we all have a sort of social responsibility to help kind of get this thing under control.
Yeah.
So any little thing that we can do to get it under control, we should be doing.
Yeah, precisely, precisely. And, you know, this can really be your opportunity, folks, to take advantage of things like what we've been doing here in the house, Imperfect Foods, where they send you stuff that is probably about 4 days from coming off the shelf somewhere. But hey, if you're just going out to shop for vegetables for the week anyway, you know, it's a great opportunity to use programs like that, that really do kind of help alleviate a lot of waste in the world and keep you from going to the store. Every Wednesday, we literally get a knock on the door and there's a box of fresh groceries, like, done for us. We select what we want. They bring it to us. It's great. There's options like that. Like you were saying with the hand sanitizer, myself, I just straight up use a small little pump bottle with rubbing alcohol. I don't even play around. I just use straight rubbing alcohol on my hands. Just take your precautions, be safe out there, people. Take care of yourselves, take care of your families. Speaking of which, Zach, thanks so much for coming on, man. I appreciate it.
No problem, Chris. One more thing I want to mention.
Yeah.
A little bit of a silver lining, possibly. Our chief of medicine at Houston Methodist sends out a weekly update on everything that's going on. And in his email this week, he mentioned that our number of inpatients for coronavirus cases has actually dropped. Now, granted, it dropped from 738 to 708, which is like only a 3% drop, but it is a drop.
Yeah.
And whether or not that's due to discharges or deaths, it did not say. My guess is a combination of both, but it is a drop, and we're hoping to see that trend continue over the next few weeks and months.
Yeah, precisely, precisely. That has been the really big silver lining, is that the 2% death rate that we saw at the beginning of this thing has already started to drop, and that's really kind of the curve that we're starting to see, is that the mortality rate even though cases are going up, the mortality rate is going down. So it seems to be getting a little less virulent in the way that it is treating people. So kudos to that. There is good news on the horizon, folks.
Exactly.
I just got off the phone with a friend of mine. The delay whenever I was getting ready to call you, Zach, was a friend of mine whose wife lives near Hong Kong. And he was talking about how there is a Chinese company and an Indian company presently in the fifth rounds of vaccine testing. So we're about halfway through the rounds of testing. They're like getting ready for the final part. So
Methodist is keeping track of a couple of companies in the U.S. that are working on a vaccine too. And they said there's one that's looking very promising. I do not remember the name of the company.
Nor do I offhand, but I do remember hearing the articles this week of people saying, like, would you be willing to get coronavirus? Like, you know, because, hey, they're going to have to inject you with some coronavirus, folks. That's kind of how a vaccine works. It's a dead coronavirus. So you're going to be injected with it. You may or may not get it. We'll figure that out on the back end. But somebody's going to have to be the guinea pig. And that's what we'll figure out. Those are the fun times to come. Zach, thank you so much for being on. I appreciate it, man. And there you
have
it.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris. I'll talk to you later.
Great words, great things coming out of Houston right now. We know that numbers, though they're rising, death is dropping. There is a positive side, like Dr. John Hall was saying earlier. Herd immunity seems to be taking over. That seems to be the general conjecture of things. Just remember to keep your vibration positive, folks. If you have a chance, go out and watch the documentary Superhuman by Carolyn Corey. I have been in touch with her lately. Hopefully she will be coming on the show to talk about it. But I share her stuff to the group regularly. Her videos, she's actively out there working on this. Her movie Superhuman talks about quite literally how our mind affects the world around us. Literally. And for the first time ever, quantifiably shown on film. Absolutely phenomenal. If you've not seen it, it's on every major platform out there. Go check it out. Superhuman, Carolyn Corey is who you knew, or Caroline Corey is who you need to look up. I have followed her work for years and years and years, and to know that this documentary is out there now is phenomenal. Our vibration, our energy makes such a big difference. I know I sound hippy-dippy, but believe me, keeping a positive outlook helps. So try not to dwell on the negative. Try not to dwell on all these horrible things. Try to keep yourself, your friends, your family happy, healthy during these times. You need to make sure to take care of yourself, take care of others. And remember, folks, if you can't be good at it. That's the exact thing. We really got to take care of each other. Right now is such a pivotal time in our society. So as your host, I'm here to tell you, I'm with you. I'm not against you. Every one of us need to do our part to change the universe around us. So I love you guys.
Thanks for listening to this episode of
take
the
care.
Dudes and Beer Podcast.
Bye-bye.
To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.